Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles ready for next day installation and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
Coming to you live from the Cross Country Mortgage Campus in Berea, Ohio, this is Cleveland Browns Daily, brought to you by Ballybet, now live in Ohio on 850 ESPN Cleveland. Here are your hosts, Bo Bishop and Nathan Zagura.
All right, let's do it live on a Draft Day Thursday edition, merely Bo, the great Z. How you living, buddy?
Dude, it's draft day, baby.
It is.
It's draft day, so I'm living well. And, you know, today it's going to be fun to get to be kind of just be a little spectator, watch it all kind of unfold. I know that the Browns will, you know, be preparing for Friday more so than today. But,
yeah,
you know, do a little TV on News 5 at 7 from the draft party.
Tell the people where they can find you.
Well, we'll start right there. You got me till 3 right
well,
now.
Well, how about it?
Well, want some draft coverage? Well, how about it? TV, News 5, 7 to 8.
Yeah.
And I will get into my automobile. It will drive me here.
Yeah.
And I will join this radio program after consuming some prime rib.
Ooh, prime rib.
Perhaps some lobster and lamb. I don't know. That's the word on the street. That's the menu for tonight. Couldn't be more excited about it.
Plus lamb.
Yeah.
Pedman going to get in on that?
They call that turf, surf, and turf.
We're in.
Keep it.
Wow,
careful.
That's
careful.
Nice.
Although,
careful.
You keep mentioning prime rib. And there was no mention of prime rib.
Well, that's what I was told when I just went down there.
The mentions that
I went down there, I was told prime rib. Well, you know the deal. If there isn't, if it's not turf, surf, and turf, if it's just surf and turf and there is no prime rib, the King of Meats will be sad. We'll recover. Then we need to double our lamb order.
Yeah, you need to double your
because I have to prepare his plate for him.
You should. I mean, he's coming in hot. He's zipping over. He's entertaining the people.
I'm working more than the organization. I'm working more than 2 hours today, as you like to say. So
you are. It's a lot.
That's right.
Hey,
about time.
What was your what was your relationship with the draft as a kid?
Didn't live in my neighborhood. We played on a travel baseball team together and had a pretty good time. What's the relationship with the draft? I don't know. I don't even know how to answer that. I enjoyed it a great deal.
Was there a kid named Draft?
Yeah,
how did you watch it? How'd you consume it? Were you excited about it?
Yes, but it is not. We're unfortunately for us, and also fortunately, we're too old for it. Like this didn't exist. Like
no.
I don't remember. I don't even know if you were to ask me what my first draft memory of like sitting there and watching the draft like this when that. I don't even know when my first memory would have been.
So in those days, it was on Saturdays.
Yep.
You'd get like the first four rounds, I think, and then the last couple on Sunday. Is that the way it worked, Gibby?
Yeah, there was a time where actually everything happened. Like you went
all day,
started at noon and went to like 10 or 11 at night.
Yeah, I loved the draft as a kid. It was we didn't have cable.
Yep.
So I would have to go to my grandmother's house to watch it.
Who's the first significant player you remember getting drafted? Like watching it.
The first draft that I remember vividly was the remember watching live. Was the Steve Empman, Quentin Coriott, Colts draft. Empman went one, Coriott went two or three.
Empman was the defensive end from Washington.
Washington, Coriott was a linebacker out of Texas A&M. They went at the top of that draft, and it was like the Colts have figured it out. They have their defense sorted out for the next decade.
Not.
Neither one of those guys hit. And
no, that was 0 for 2.
Shortly thereafter was the infamous Kuiper with Tobin. Was it Vince Tobin?
Yes.
Or was it that who it was? Yeah, yes. Where he said, what the hell does Mel Kiper know or whatever about when they wanted to take Dilfer. I remember those. I remember.
All right, the Dilfer one I remember. I remember Heath Shuler getting drafted for some reason. So I don't even know what year that is.
So that's
but I remember
like
that
probably
draft.
94-ish.
Okay.
Somewhere in there.
So high school. I would
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. That's probably it. other than previous to that, the thing that I would look forward to about the draft was the Sports Illustrated that would come out the week before, where Dr. Z would put out his projection of the first round, and you'd be like, oh, these guys are going to end up here. Yeah. That'd be cool if this guy ended up here. And I remember my first draft, like, memory period, not watching it, was The Incredible Bulk, which is Tony Mandarich on the cover of Sports Illustrated, I want to say in 89.
So I remember Boz, Bo, Mandarich.
Yeah.
Yeah, those were like the big ones of our youth, I feel like.
For sure. Yes, absolutely.
Because I don't remember, like, I want to say it's 84, where you had Marino and Kelly, and you had, like,
I think
that,
that's 83.
Or 83. Like, I don't remember.
Something. Yeah,
I don't remember.
Right
that
in
at
there.
All.
No, I don't. I don't at all. There's a great 30 for 30 on it.
Yeah.
But I
watched that 30.
Have no, I did too. I have no remembrance of that. That was the first draft I remember. And then as you get older, then I started to really get into it. And then when Leaf got drafted, he was somebody who wasn't a particularly like close friend of mine, but an acquaintance enough that we played some all-star basketball stuff and went to a couple games out at Washington State when he played out there. And all of a sudden, I was like, oh, my God, a guy I know is going to get drafted. And the crazy thing about that was with Leaf is I suppose by draft day it was known that the Colts were taking Manning, but in the lead-up, there was a lot of back and forth that Peyton Manning couldn't win the big one. That was real.
So you bringing this up has now stirred my memory, which that would be the Leaf-Manning 1-2 debate is probably the first like pundit draft debate that I really remember going.
I think that's fair.
Intensely.
Yes, because the knock on – Manning would have been the number one pick had he gone out the year before.
Yep.
He goes and plays his senior season at Tennessee with the objective of, I've never beaten Florida. I'm going to go win a national title. I'm going to win the Heisman. He did not beat Florida. He did play for a national title, sort of. They played for a half of it is basically what it worked out to.
Yeah.
Because Michigan beat Washington State in the Rose Bowl, so they got the one half. And then they played did they play Nebraska in 97?
It was 97. This is the kid. This is Chucky Wood.
It's Chuck Wood for sure, but they split that national title with Nebraska.
Not according to the kid.
I'm sure in his own personal record book. It's all theirs.
Yes.
so Manning didn't do that. Didn't win the Heisman. Any of those things.
Because
so
Chucky Wood won the Heisman, right?
He did. Yeah. I mean, the Heisman finalists that year were Leaf, Manning, Woodson, Moss. Pretty good. So
three
Leaf
out
goes
four
second.
Ain't bad.
No, and like stuff just came way too quick. Way too quick for Leaf. He just was not. You know, Washington State is an outpost. He went from like off the grid to Heisman contender out of nowhere. You know, it really was. It just was way too much, way too soon. But there was real dialogue around what to do between the two, and the knock on Manning was he can't win the big one. He never beat Florida, didn't win a national title, couldn't win the Heisman. Obviously, it worked out quite well for the Colts the way that it did turn out, and quite spectacularly not so for Lee.
It's not a what if, because that's silliness. But could you imagine in today's day and age, so Peyton Manning gets picked number one overall.
Yes.
And we know him as, I will say, he's on the Mount Rushmore of quarterbacks, period. Greatest regular season quarterback of all time. All of it.
Yep.
His rookie season.
Yeah.
He comes into the league. He goes 3-13 mm-hmm. and throws a league-high 28 picks, and that was a record.
Yep.
28 picks for a rookie. In today's day and age, I don't think he plays out that first season.
Mm.
And he certainly doesn't get the opportunity to just come back. And then, by the way, next year he goes 13-3, was second in the MVP voting, was third in offensive player of the year, second team all-pro, pro bowler, and began to become – he just became Peyton Manning immediately after 1 year. But you think about how few games a guy like Zach Wilson or a Trey Lance or any of these guys really get. – You know, Trevor Lawrence would maybe be the closest in the sense that he hasn't become Peyton Manning, but his rookie year was kind of a debacle, but it was totally blamed on the Urban Meyer situation, which was an unmitigated disaster. But I just don't know in this social media age and this talking every single day, breaking down everything, I don't know that he would have survived that and gone on to have the career that he had.
So I think he actually alluded to that I can't remember if it was a Peyton's Places or if he had – if it was when he had Burrow or one of those guys on Manningcast, but he said that. He said, I would not have lasted now because
especially
there is no patience.
In New York?
Yeah, right. But like that they just would not have had the patience for me that I needed that year to see it and struggle. And it's a great point. I feel like he addressed it within the last couple of years with a rookie quarterback who was really good as a rookie. And it might have been CJ.
Okay.
might have been C.J. Stroud. Did he have C.J. Stroud on Manning Cast this year? I think they did.
Yes, at some point.
We talked about it with him.
And I think he talked about it with him, about how, you know, you're doing this, and this is what I did as a rookie, and don't look up, you know, self-deprecating like he always does. But, no, I think that's very fair. And it does speak to – I don't think there's any situation, like, for example, Leaf could have been drafted in, but there are a great many players who have been drafted the last 25 years, especially at that position, where the circumstances they're drafted into are untenable.
David Carr.
And it's a failure. David Carr, Tim Couch. Man, you want to talk about, like, what a situation where you have to be the face of a franchise of an expansion team?
They almost shouldn't allow expansion teams to draft first-round quarterback. Like, they should have to start with – I might be wrong about this, and it could have come later, but in my mind, Jacksonville kind of started with Mark Brunell. Carolina started with Steve Beuerlein.
They did. Yep.
That's how it's got to start.
Yeah. Now, Carolina drafted Kerry Collins, I think, in their first draft.
Okay.
But he didn't play.
Right.
He wasn't set to play right away. Yeah, because I want to say the Jags' first pick was Bocelli, right?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Yeah, no, they went in a different way.
We had Ty Detmer in 99.
Yeah, I mean,
that was
I
supposed
remember
to be the guy. That was supposed to be the bridge.
You were done no favors.
Correct.
By the way that worked. I mean, it was.
Do you think there ever will be another expansion franchise? Do you think they'll ever try to go to
their 32?
Question. Do you think they ever try to go to 36?
I don't think so. I think, if anything, you'll just leverage. Like, what cities don't – only Toronto is the only one that makes any sense to me. I know there's always the London thing. Toronto's the only city that I look at and go, there's the economic ability to handle it. There would be the concentrated wealth there to be able to handle it. There would be enough – obviously a ton of corporate money. That's the only one out there that to me looks like viable.
Is
where else needs one?
I don't know about needs, but I'm trying to just think of places that, you know, obviously it hasn't worked in St. Louis twice.
Yeah. Problem with St. Louis, talking to Laurinaitis about this, there's no corporate money.
Yeah.
So there's Oklahoma down there.
I live
Oklahoma
there.
City not big enough?
Probably the most likely. The biggest city without one, so funny, NBC just did this. They had to do a class on like an expanding business, and the thing he picked was finding an NFL expansion team. And so he was looking through all these things of like, well, what cities fit the demographics? Where do they love football? Where's enough growth? Where's enough population? Enough all of this. And the place he settled on, and I think it's the right one, but I don't know that they need one, is the San Antonio, Austin world.
Yeah. Austin.
Like that area, you could go kind of between two cities, football crazy, and a ton of population that's ever expanding.
And Austin has a ton of money.
Yeah. And so you have a mix of that was the place he landed on, was that San Antonio, Austin area, that was the biggest United States.
St. Louis is a – they love baseball the way we love the Browns.
Did you see, by the way, the images from now that they've been bad for a couple of years? How few people were at Busch Stadium?
Yeah,
this week
it's not going well. They don't like the leadership in that.
No, it's bad.
So they don't like baseball like our fans.
No,
like
they
the
don't.
Browns, because they were there 0-16.
No,
they were there. Yeah.
No, they are the great baseball city.
It's a baseball town first. It's a hockey town second.
The Blues
with the Blues, because you know the name makes sense,
right?
When the Rams were good, the town loved it. If they were average, no one cared.
Yeah. Like, it's pretty amazing that Georgia Frontier moved a team from Los Angeles to St. Louis.
Yeah.
Is it true that at the time when the St. Louis football Cardinals were the St. Louis Cardinals,
yeah,
that's the only time ever one city's had the same exact team name for two professional sports?
No.
No, who else?
New York Giants.
Yep.
Were the New York Giants football were around back then?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. They're one of the oldest franchises.
So those are the Giants. Two. Those would be the two?
Yeah. And there is the only other one I was thinking, no, that wouldn't. It's probably just those two.
Interesting.
No. 1998 draft. Let me take you back in time real quick.
Go ahead. Please.
Peyton Manning 1, Leaf 2. Number 3 to the Arizona Cardinals, Andre Wadsworth, defensive end, Florida State.
Yeah, he was a beast. Beast in college.
Woodson went 4. Curtis Enos, 5 to the Bears.
Jeez, he's an all-time bust. He's a bigger bust than Kajana Carter.
Yeah.
Because Carter blew out his knee twice.
Yeah.
Enos went to the Bears?
Yeah.
Number 6 to St. Louis, Grant Wistrom, defensive end.
Nebraska.
53 career sacks.
Not Kyle terrible. Turley went 7 to the Saints.
Tackle.
Greg Ellis, defensive end,
North
8
Carolina.
To the Cowboys.
Fred
Taylor to Jacksonville at 9.
Great career.
Dwayne Starks, the corner to the Ravens at
25
10.
Career picks. Good pick.
Randy Moss went 21st.
Yeah.
There was one other Hall of Famer in that first round. Number 26, Alan Faneca.
Yeah.
To the Pittsburgh
to the
Steelers.
Squealers.
You know who the Niners picked in the first round? R.W. McWhorters.
Wow. Oklahoma State, right?
Oklahoma State, yeah.
So they got Faneca and Hines Ward in that draft.
Jeez.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
What, Gibby, what was your relationship with the draft as a kid?
I didn't have cable like
Same
you.
Man.
But, like, when I got to high school, my buddy Janko and I, we'd all have a draft party. We'd go over to his house. His mom had cable. We'd watch it. It was awesome. It was great. Matter of fact, like, when I started then working for ESPN and had to work draft day, it was like, ugh.
Yeah.
We don't get to hang out and watch the draft together. So then he would come to the draft parties. We threw some parties at Harpo's Sports Cafe in the Brookgate Shopping Center. People would camp out in lawn chairs. Like, they'd be waiting outside the door at 6 a.m. as we were loading in for the day. Because we would broadcast the entire
broadcast
day from noon
all
to
day.
10.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
I mean, we had wedding parties show up.
Yeah.
I'll never forget the one year, like, we had issues with the owner of the bar not wanting to feed us, us, even though we were there for 10 hours.
Yeah.
So, me being the smart one, I arranged for an all-you-can-eat Italian feast in our cargo van. You could come in and there were stools and you could sit there and eat.
Oh, that's
great. I'm just not going to spend any money on you.
That's fantastic.
And we were in there when the helmet changed in 2007 for Brady Quinn, because I almost concussed myself jumping up trying to get out of the van to get back in, because everything changed and the roar
that
went up was unreal.
Yeah, same draft we got Hoff.
Yeah.
Now, my guess is that of all of us, when you think about just draft day, Uno's experience is probably the ultimate experience, because you grew up where the draft day was the Super Bowl.
Yes. And because, unfortunately, my childhood Browns teams were not always the best,
sure,
I looked forward to the draft more than I looked forward to anything else in the season. So it was
there's no question. Z and I were talking this morning about this. Like, for the better part of two decades, this was the Super Bowl. And we say the line all the time. We said it to JW. He was with us last week. Now the Super Bowl is the Super Bowl. But for 15, 20 years, this was the thing. And you and I were chuckling about it this morning, because when you mentioned it, I started laughing because I've heard it 1,000 times. Like, we would draft somebody in the 6th, 7th round, a receiver, and it would be like, oh, we got a starter. This
He's
guy
starting.
Can start.
Yeah. Now it's, I don't know if they're going to make the team.
Totally different.
Yeah. Gibby, was that draft you're referencing? Is the Joe Thomas year, is that same as Flacco, or is Flacco the year after?
It's Jamarcus Russell. So it goes, it's two all, it goes Jamarcus Russell, Calvin Johnson, Joe Thomas.
What year was Brady Quinn the same as Joe Thomas?
Yes.
Yeah,
so then I think,
because, like, you were like, oh my God, we got a left tackle
and
we got
a franchise
quarterback.
Yeah. I was at Brady's first game here in the preseason. He led a 2-minute drill where we won. And I mean, he's a Dublin kid, and I was doing television in Columbus at the time. It was on our air at Channel 10 down in Columbus, and we were up here broadcasting, and Brady kept wanting to see him, and he led like a 2-minute drill in preseason. We're like, my God, that's it. You've done it.
He's going to be the guy.
And the crazy thing with him was the timing of it, because then Anderson has the year that nobody expects, you know, in 07. Nobody expects Derek Anderson to do that, because wasn't it Charlie Fry
Charlie
into
Fry
Anderson?
Started, and it was awful. Like, he got traded the day after the first game. To
correct.
Seattle.
Yeah.
Braylon had 16 touchdowns. Winslow went nuts.
Yeah. Jamal Lewis was on that team. That's 07.
A crazy game against Cincinnati.
Didn't they have actually play call right the second to last game of the year? Ask the voice this. Like, it's 80 mile an hour winds in Cincinnati, and we decide to throw the ball 45 times.
Yeah. I remember that game vividly. Also, just from the standpoint of, like, it was almost set up for Brady to take it. Because you trade Fry, and then all of a sudden Anderson has this year. And then the next year in 08, you're like, well, what do we do now? We opened with the Cowboys. They hammered us here.
Yep.
I was at that game. And it was like, well, so what do we do?
There
do we play Anderson, who's a Pro Bowler, legitimate?
Yep.
Or do we got this kid we drafted 22nd overall out of Notre Dame. What do we do?
Braylon gets in a fight with one of LeBron's people outside a bar.
Didn't Winslow get hurt in that Dallas game?
No, Braylon got hurt because he was running around without his cleats on and stepped
Winslow
on something.
Yeah, I don't know. When did Winslow get hurt?
He, like, broke his leg one year, and then he got the
motorcycle thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
By the way, so Flacco was 2008. I was with you. I don't know. Do you remember that? At that bar doing
at Harpo's?
I was doing fantasy stuff for ESPN Cleveland. Yeah.
Yeah, I had to have worked with you then.
Yeah.
Boy, that's 16 years, boys.
Yeah.
That's a what long ways you guys have been a part of each other.
I was there for the Thomas Brady Quinn one as well, but I definitely remember the Flacco when I was doing a ton of fantasy stuff.
It's changed so much, you know, for us and for this fan base and all of it. And you made the point, like, you know, I don't know that there is a spot here where somebody could come in and start, you know.
No.
Like, even to contribute, we've talked a lot about off-ball linebacker and we've talked about D-tackle, but it's like, that's kind of a stretch, you know.
It's going to be a defense. If somebody is drafted in the second round that's going to contribute significantly this year, it's either going to be a defensive tackle, but they'd still be a part of a rotation because they're very high on Quentin Jefferson, and rightfully so. You bring back Shelby, you bring back Mo Hurst, you got Siaki Ika taking a step forward, hopefully, and then Dalvin. And then wide receiver, and that's going to be somebody that has a unique skill set, whether that be like a Troy Franklin who could just fly, whether it's Uno's guy, Malachi Corley. Pedro Boots on the Ground says no way they're trading Brandon Ayuk, impossible, and that they will draft Malachi Corley and let Debo walk next year.
That's fine. I want Pedro on the horn the moment it happens. I want instant reaction with
I don't even know if he's so used to defeat on this show.
This is,
he just gets battered every time.
No. Like, I want boots on the ground
every
reaction.
Every time he comes here, it's the Red Wedding.
It is.
We send our
CBD
regards.
CBD sends our regards.
That's right.
Go home. If you can, if you have your appendages. What is a draft since you guys have been working here where in the moment you thought we nailed it and one in the moment where you went, oh no, what have we done? Is there one of each of those?
Well, 2014.
Yeah.
You have to, I mean, you've got.
But I understand you've told the story on the pandemonium of it, but did you, because you were looking at tape at that time.
I was.
Did you like Johnny's tape?
So my evaluation of him was, and the title of my report was, the quarterback you can't draft. I said, the quarterback you can't afford to pass up, but the quarterback you can't draft. And I said, you guys are going to have to answer the question. I'm not in the room with him. I don't know what kind of, if he's driven to actually study and work and all of those things. He's very fun. I came out of that being like, Mike Evans is unbelievable. Watching his tape, I'm just like, oh, so you just throw it up to Mike Evans.
Right.
Great play. And by the way, it's worked in the NFL as well.
To a gold jacket.
1,000 yards every single season he's been in the league. So you felt like at that point, so the way that it was presented, obviously, and the story of what actually happened with Justin Gilbert is long and distinguished and troubling. But like that was presented like we got Antonio Cromartie to play Pettine's defense.
Mm-hmm.
And we got, you know, our quarterback now is going to be exciting and change the game. Like, he went into Alabama and beat Alabama as a sophomore. Right? So, like, that was the one coming out of it. And certainly, while it didn't help on the field business-wise, it was a total home run. So that was one where I thought for sure that, you know, we really had nailed that. In terms of the other way around, I would probably say for me, one where I was just like, maybe like 16 when we drafted a million people and it was like they just kind of wanted to get guys who won awards, basically, is what it felt like. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
You remember that, Gibbe? I'm trying to pull that draft up right now.
16, is that like?
That's Corey Coleman's draft for the Browns.
The Coleman draft?
And they
Higgins
were,
was in there.
Higgins, Ricardo Lewis, Kessler, Nassif.
Tony Kessler.
We drafted
Telfer.
1,000 people.
Yeah.
Randall Telfer, yeah. All right, I'm going through it now, draft by draft, for when I've been
I just
here.
Did this with my dad last night. We did every Browns draft since 2000.
So my first draft doing Browns daily was.
I don't know if I'd call it fun, Uno.
I
so
had
the
fun.
One, okay, I'll tell you the one where I was first, was my first draft. Which was 2013. Barkevious Mingo at 6.
Oh, my God.
We didn't have a second.
I wanted
And then
that
we took Leon
so
McFadden right before the Honey Badger went to Arizona.
Mm. Who went right around Mingo?
It's a terrible draft, period.
Is this like the Eric Fisher draft?
Yes. Yes, it is. Yeah. There were. How do I pull up that full draft?
We actually made a trade that day with the Steelers, trading picks, and the Steelers could move up and take someone.
So the best players drafted in that first round, you had just I'm just keeping it in the first round.
Yep.
Lane Johnson went fourth, was a very good pick. So it went Eric Fisher, Luke Jokel, Deion Jordan, Lane Johnson, Ziggy Ansah, Barkevious Mingo, Jonathan Cooper, Tavon Austin, D. Milner, did not work out. Chance Warmack, solid career. DJ Fluker, DJ Hayden, Sheldon Richardson, Star Lutalele, Kenny Vaccaro, EJ Manuel, Jarvis Jones,
wow.
Eric Reed, Justin Pugh still in the league, Kyle Long, Tyler Eifert, Desmond Trufant. Desmond Trufant might have been one of the better players in this first round. Sharif Floyd out of Florida, then Bjorn Werner, Xavier Rhodes. Xavier Rhodes might have been one of the best people. Dayton Jones, DeAndre Hopkins, who's the best player taken in this first round. Sylvester Williams, Cordarrelle Patterson, Alec Ogletree, Travis Frederick, Matt Elam. That was the first round.
I just remember, because that was my first year.
Travis Kelce, first pick of the third round. Honey Badger, pick 69.
Pick
68 was Leon
In the
McFadden.
Fourth round, we traded with Pittsburgh. We traded our fourth round pick for Pittsburgh's 2014 third round pick. And everybody's like, no one trades with
you. Don't trade with them.
No, you don't trade in the division. You don't try. What are you doing?
By the way,
the building was under renovation. So the media and all of our shows had to happen in the field house. Joe Banner says it's day three.
Yeah.
Joe Banner says, we're not coming down after we make our last pick. We're coming down after we sign all our free agents. Press conference was 10 p.m. Saturday night.
Oh, I wanted to shoot myself. That's awful. The one I was most sure of from a Browns draft, and then also in most disbelief from a Browns perspective, was the one with Trent Richardson. So, like, if you were to convince me that Trent Richardson, I didn't think Trent, that was the Andrew Luck, Robert Griffin draft.
Yep.
At no point was I like of the belief of like Trent Richardson draft a running back third overall. Although at that time you still did.
You did, yeah.
You did.
That was totally.
But the thing with Richardson was, to me, he was a can't miss.
Yep.
He had tree trunks for legs. He was the fastest guy at Alabama. He never got caught. He returned punts, and he was a running back, and he was big and physical and all these things. And you thought, well, the worst damn case scenario is you got Jamal Lewis. That's the worst case.
Yeah.
You got an 8-year career, 1,200 yards a season. You get Nick Chubb. That's what you thought. That's what I thought. It's impossible that that won't hit.
Yes.
Now, what nobody knew, including anybody who drafted him, anybody in evaluation of him, is that he couldn't read it.
Well, that's why it was an unbelievable trade when you think about the fact they traded him for a first-round pick.
It's crazy. It's crazy because they knew it.
Yep.
And it was known. But, like, so that was one where I was most excited and most wrong. The one in that same draft, I'm pretty sure, is also the most disappointed and the most right when they drafted Brandon Whedon, who's a 27-year-old quarterback at Oklahoma State, who was a system guy with a big arm, who's a pitcher. But who drafts a 27-year-old quarterback in the first round? That was one I was like, why would you ever do that? So those things happened in the same draft. Neither one obviously worked out, but I was so convinced Richardson would be great.
Of course.
Minimum, and so convinced that Whedon was silly.
And he wasn't bad his rookie year.
Richardson?
I want to say
it was always 1,000 yards, but it was like probably 3.9 a carry.
It was that type of thing. Yeah, right.
He had a lot of volume. He caught a lot of passes.
Yeah.
All right, I got another draft for you. Here's 2015. This is a horrific draft. 2015, you have two ones, a two, two threes, two fours.
You could turn your franchise around if this you hit on half of those.
This is the draft where I did the bit of just take the guesswork out of it and draft the best available Buckeye at every pick.
Well, they did not. They picked.
I don't think we took one.
This is one where you
use.
Or is
that 16? Is it six? Which is the one? No. Let me just. No, it would have been.
I think it's 15.
I'll go to the full draft afterwards, but here's what we drafted. Two ones, a two, two threes, two fours. Danny Shelton, pick 12. Cam Irving, pick 19. Like, that's using your most valuable resources on
a guard and a D tackle.
He was supposed to be a center.
Yeah.
And a non-pass rushing defensive tackle. Nate Orchard was pick 51 out of Utah.
Good dude.
Made in the league 7 years. All these guys, I mean, Shelton made in the league 8 years, Irving 9 years, Orchard 7, Duke Johnson 8 years, and then Xavier Cooper out of Washington State was in the third round. He made 3 years. Ibrahim Campbell and Vince Maley were your two fourth-round picks. And then you had Charles Gaines, Malcolm Johnson, Randall Telfer, Hayes Pollard,
and Ifo Ekpre Olomo, who never played.
That guy should have been the truth.
His knee injury.
That's the Jameis draft.
2015.
Ifo should have been good out of Oregon.
16.
16 is the one where I did draft best available. Okay, so 16. So it's coming out of. It was coming out of that draft that I said, just take the guesswork out of it. Just draft the best available Buckeye.
16, you have 1, 2, 3 threes, 4 fours, 4 fives. And you pick Corey Coleman, bust. Emmanuel Ogba, solid career, still in the league. Carl Nassib, okay. Sean Coleman, kind of off-field stuff derailed him in terms of sickness. And Cody Kessler in the third round. Joe Schobert, good pick in the fourth round. Ricardo Lewis, Derek Kindred, Seth DeValve, Jordan Payton, Spencer Drango, Hollywood Higgins, who was, ended up being the best. I mean, like, Ricardo Lewis had 500 yards receiving for his career. Trey Caldwell and Scooby Wright out of Arizona. I mean, that draft was...
I love Scooby.
That was rough. Because then after that, you start getting to the point where we were so bad that you got real people. 17 is Miles.
Yeah, then you're...
18 you're right. is Baker and, you know... Yeah, this was a pretty good draft. You still have guys that are playing at a decent level. Miles, Jabril, David Njoku, Larry Ogunjobi. Those were all pretty darn good picks there.
So I'm pretty sure in if 16, the best available Buckeye thing that I laid out would have elicited Taylor Decker and Michael Thomas with your first two picks.
Yep, that would have worked.
That's the way that would have worked.
MT fell really far that year, didn't
second
he?
Second rounder, yeah. And it's possible that the third, and I think Von Bell was a third, second rounder. But it's, anyway, if you just had done that and just taken the guesswork out of it. But that's what makes this look, it's so fun. This is the catbird seat situation you're in. Yep. Now, where you have all the talent. You're not worrying about those things. But you can understand why. I guarantee you people out there listening right now are going like, I don't know where I was when this happened or when this happened. And like you were explaining, you've told the story before, like the euphoria around Manziel.
Oh, my God.
It was rock star stuff. It was rock star.
And I'm not saying this to be funny, but. Didn't, like, Hammer cry?
Yes.
Like, he wept.
Did he?
On air. Yeah. When we picked Johnny Manziel.
Yes.
Yeah.
Ohio State had 12 players drafted in 2016.
Yeah.
Bosa.
Mm-hmm. He wouldn't
Zeke,
have been available. Zeke wouldn't have been.
Eli Apple. Mm-mm. Taylor Decker.
Decker mm-hmm. would have been.
Darren Lee. Michael Thomas.
What happened to Darren?
Von Bell. Adolphus there. Washington. Those are your top ones, top eight of the 12.
So it's possible that Bell would have been there. They definitely, the strictest next Buckeye available would have elicited you, Decker and Thomas.
Those eight went in the top 80.
Yeah. Yeah. It's loaded. Yeah. So this will be, so you can sit back and relax and watch. There will be some action. We'll get into some of the things that we're hearing that could happen at the top of the draft. Possible trade partners have some fun today. But, again, this is a sit back and watch for Browns fans. And then tomorrow we will get to do some heavy lifting. We'll go around the league coming up next. Those are your hot topics of the day. You listen to Cleveland Browns Daily on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles ready for next day installation and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit RightRug.com, that's RiteRug.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
Cleveland Browns Daily, brought to you by Ballybet, now live in Ohio on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
Champions League, the free gaming community for Browns fans around the world. Visit clevelandbrowns.com/Champions League to join in on the fun now. We can report that Senior Swag is first-round draft day ready.
Oh, baby.
A gorgeous blue jacket, a crisp white shirt,
you know
a nice
is.
Khaki pant.
There's the man I need to see.
Who's that? Oh, there's your guy right there. Yep. Double T. And then a new sneaker choice out of him. I wasn't sure what he was wearing. It was an all-white.
It was white.
It was all white.
So I don't.
Strong look.
Different
lighting. I don't know what's happened,
too. I can see you clear as day.
Yeah.
You're here.
I know it. There's something that has changed in the makeup of this facility to where now there is a lot more glare over there than there previously was.
Is it could be that one right behind? Look over your head here.
I don't know.
That one's shooting out this way?
I don't know. But it used to be a relatively clear view.
I could see out here, yeah.
You got a lot going on. There's a lot of lighting around
TVs.
Here now.
By the way, when you walked in, did you see the new accoutrement that have been added?
I did. To me, that's going to be a game changer. That's now become a space of common that people use. That changes it.
Do you know what it is?
I don't.
So it looks like to you what? How would you
describe it? I just looked at it briefly. Hold, please.
In my mind, it's a misshapen. Getting a look at it. Okay, so there's a table outside of our studio right now.
Yeah.
And in the middle of the table was set up for, you know, electrical, but there's, of course, no electricity just out in the middle of the hall. So they have put what does that appear to be to you from this vantage point?
I wish I'm going to do a disservice because I can't get an on top angle.
No,
I
but from
at
the
briefly,
side, what does it look like?
And it looks like something my wife would put on a table.
Like a stone disc that is kind of misshapen,
sure.
Like one side
yeah.
is significantly
sure.
thicker than the other.
Yeah.
It's actually
okay.
a tic-tac-toe board.
My kids would love it. They're big tic-tac-toe at restaurants.
Yeah, but at some point you realize that once two people know how to play tic-tac-toe, nobody ever wins.
The problem with it is we, Bootsy had that realization the last, when we were in Hawaii. He always, as soon as we sit down, tic-tac-toe, Dad, he starts drawing them up. So I get to the point where I'm like, dude, he's like, Dad, it's always cat's game.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
Can't be one unless
that's
somebody
the trouble.
Does something wrong.
You'd have to be a real big moron
yeah.
to blow
if
it.
If you didn't, if you hadn't played before, I think a person of intelligence could still get it wrong at the beginning. But once you have lost once to that method.
One loss.
Yeah, once you let him get 1, 2, 3 on you.
That's it.
That's it.
It's over.
Right.
Yeah. What do you make of what's going on in Cincinnati? Trey Hendrickson wants to trade now.
Am I supposed to be sad? Is it supposed to make me sad? No, it makes me it's
thrilling.
Glorious.
It's thrilling.
Hey, listen, you're young, good talent, and you brought him in at free agency. Mm-hmm. You drafted T. Higgins, and now they want out. They want money, and ultimately that's what this business is about. It's about the money, and it's about getting money to the players.
It seems...
if you're not willing to do that, they're going to be unhappy. And to me, like they trade – they're not. I'm guessing they're not going to accommodate.
They're not going to accommodate him or T.
But then you have guys who are playing like malcontents.
Well, worse than that, you're going to have a situation. Well, not good
dissension
for us.
Dissension in the locker room.
You'll have all of that. They're banking on Burrow to overcome all of that. The other thing, Zeke, that it seems to me like is that Mike Brown would rather lose somebody for nothing rather than lose somebody for less than market value.
Yes.
Because Higgins is going to walk for nothing. Hendrickson might.
Maybe he's hoping for a compensatory third.
Okay.
If you can catch his eye since knocking Uno. Agua.
Water.
You're so good at that.
Yeah. Thank you. The other thing you have to remember, though, with the – I was thinking about this. Like, the Brown family, while worth a great deal, is not liquid. Mm-hmm. So when you think about the notion of, like –
much like the Spanoses had that issue.
There's a bunch of them. There's actually more than – I was thinking about this morning, and by my count, like – instances where the wealth was accumulated because of the team. There are none in the AFC East. In the North, there are the Bengals and the Steelers. In the South, there are the Colts and the Adams, so Titans and Colts. In the West, it is Spanos in the Chargers, yep. And it is Vegas, where you would have family wealth accumulated. I'm not sure about the Hunt family. They've owned, but I think the wealth came before. I don't think it's a because of
yes.
that. Are the Maras still in control in New York? I know partial, but are they fully?
I think so.
I feel like they took on McCaskey, obviously, in Chicago. That's Hallis. Green Bay is what it is. In the South, no. Nope, not in the South. And in the West, the Bidwell. That's
yep.
it. Those are the families that the wealth was accumulated primarily because of owning an NFL team.
Yep.
But you have to remember, like, the Bengals, I mean, Paul Brown's a coach, you know? So they don't have that to work with. So this could be a real problem for them. That's what's a critical draft for them. They need to land a bunch of guys.
Yeah, the Mara family still is
the primarily.
I got this is crazy.
Third
so this
generation
is,
of his family to own the Giants. His grandfather, Tim, founded the team in 1925.
This is from Wikipedia.
Yep.
So take it with a grain of salt, but at the same time, probably right. Arizona Cardinals owner Michael Bidwell, year acquired in this family, 1932, purchase price $50,000.
$50,000.
Arthur Blank, Atlanta Falcons, bought in 2002, purchase price $545 million.
Oh, jeez.
Quite an investment.
Quite the investment.
Steve Bisciotti, $300,000 to buy the Baltimore Ravens in the $300 million. I'm sorry, in 2000.
Wow.
Buffalo Bills, the Pagulas, bought him in 2014 for $1.4 billion.
So now you're starting to get.
David Tepper, Carolina Panthers, 2018, $2.275 billion.
Mm-hmm.
The Chicago Bears, bought in 1924, $100.
Yeah, George Halas created the Bears.
Created the Bears. Mike Brown for greater than $200 million in 1968 and says, and 2011. I don't know what 2 years means. The Haslams bought the
$200 million in 1968.
So it must be 2011.
Yeah, maybe that would buy make it out. More yeah. sense, yeah.
But in 2012, the Browns bought, so we maybe needed to add another $200 million to buy out whatever was remaining.
What was left,
because
yeah.
the Browns were bought in 2012, the very next year. By the Haslams for $1 billion.
Mm-hmm.
Jerry Jones.
There's the one. This is the one.
Dallas Cowboys, 1989 for $140 million.
This is the one. Now, I'm not going to, what do I know about 1932 and the Bidwells buying the, you know, I don't, who knows what that even means.
Yep.
What sport, what are we doing? You're coming out of the Depression. Who knows what you're even buying? But when Jerry Jones bought the Cowboys, you had a pretty good idea what you were buying. At that point, they were already branded as America's team. At that point,
yep.
they'd already won 3 Super Bowls. Now, they were in a tough spot in terms of the fact that they were didn't have a great roster, but he was smart enough to hire Jimmy Johnson and let him go to work, and they did. But they were a brand. I mean, the Dallas
yes.
Cowboys in 1989 were a brand. Where I grew up,
Dallas
you picked
was a
teams,
show.
Hell yeah. They were in the open of the
in
show,
the
Dallas. I
yes.
mean, it was
exactly.
it would come out after the Dukes of Hazzard, and then there you go. Let's watch a little Dallas. At least for the open. I loved that open as a kid.
Same.
But the thing that the point I was going to make on this is they were known. They were at that time, no, they were not the Yankees, but they were every bit the Lakers at that time.
Oh, yeah.
Kids where I grew up, you had to pick a team. There were so many Tony Dorsett jerseys, Herschel Walker jerseys.
America's
like
team.
America's team. And he got it for $140 million. It's worth $10 billion now.
Yeah.
That's the one where it's like,
that's
holy
a good
cow, what a. That's one where you knew what you were buying. It seemed like a great deal at the time, and then it's been that a hundredfold.
I mean, some of these are, they were all good deals. I mean, the most recent, obviously, is Denver, Rob Walton, $4.65 billion.
Yeah.
The Lions for $4 million in 1963. The Houston Texans, Cal McNair, this is a pretty good one, 1999 for $700 million. Indianapolis Colts, Jerm Irsay in 1972 for $19 million.
Jeez. The Baltimore Colts at the time.
This is a pretty – Shahid Khan bought the Jags in 2012 for $760 million. The Browns were $1 billion. So he got 25%.
That makes sense to me.
Yep.
That the Jaguars would be worth 60% of the Browns.
Chiefs, $25,000. The Hunt family bought them in 1960. Raiders at list no price. Chargers, Dean Spanos for $72 million in 1984.
Yeah.
That's worked out very nicely for him.
Mm-hmm.
The Rams, Kroenke, this is outrageous, for $80 million in 95, and then to buy everybody out, $450 million in 2010. So all he's got into it, $500
million. $500 million. Now, he did have to build the stadium out of his money.
Yep.
But they're probably worth $7 billion now.
Yep.
Or $8.
This is we're about to run through a streak of very good ones. Dolphins, 2008, $1 billion, Stephen Ross. Ziggy Wilf for the Vikings in 2005 for only $600 million. Robert Kraft in 94, Patriots, $175 million.
Oh, my gosh.
New Orleans Saints in 1985, Gail Benson, $64
million. Oh.
That's a pretty good one, too.
So that's amazing. So he got the Saints in 85 for $64 million. The Saints were hapless. Jerry got the Cowboys for $140
four or five years later. Yeah. The New York Giants, $500 in 1925 for the Mara family.
Yep.
The Jets, Woody Johnson, $630 million in the year 2000.
In the year 2000. From the Hess family, I believe.
This is a good one, too. Jeffrey Lurie, 1994, $185 million to get the Eagles.
Oof.
Rooney family, $2,500 in 1933. The Niners, Denise DeBartolo and Jed York, they own it going back for $17 million in 1977.
But that's Eddie's dad?
Yes.
Eddie's dad bought him in 77?
That would be my guess, yeah.
Did Eddie have him in 70? Eddie wouldn't have been old enough to have him in 77 because he was all
over
in the
DeBartolo family. Right.
Sure, but it was probably his dad who bought him in 77.
Yeah. And
it's still in their family now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Think about the value that by the in 13 years, 1990, the Niners had to be a pretty valuable franchise.
They had to be the second or third most valuable Cowboys, and I don't know who else, but yeah.
Seahawks in 97, $200 million in 1997 for the Seahawks. Bucks in 95, 192 to the Glazers. The Titans, which was the original Oilers, 25,000 in 1959. What does she have to be so upset about?
And I don't know.
And then Josh Harris, $6 billion for the Commanders last year.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wild.
There you go. The next one that could be on the market potentially would be Seattle. Just that's the last, you know, Paul Allen's family. What are they
going to do?
What do they
do? They've made quite a pretty – they're going to turn $200 million in
1997. Lucky, and Paul didn't have any other source of resource of income, so thank God that it worked.
Thank goodness.
Thank goodness that it worked for him. Zeke Elliott visiting the Cowboys this week. Fifth-year options, and we mentioned Jamar Chase. Micah Parsons gets his as well. Amon-Ra St. Brown, Penei Sewell. The Penei Sewell-Jamar Chase one's interesting because that was a big conversation. Like, what do you do there? Do you take the guy to protect Burrow or the guy to throw
weapons.
It to? Both of them worked.
Both worked.
To be fair, they both worked. Both of those guys were absolute dudes on that side of things. All right, coming up next, ranking the biggest NFL draft busts for every team. We will get into that. We've got a little higher or lower coming your way as well. Assistant General Manager Glenn Cook is going to join the program. One bold prediction as well. You listen to Cleveland Browns Daily on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
Cleveland Browns Daily, brought to you by Ballybet, now live in Ohio on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
And be part of one of the most passionate fan bases in the NFL. Join NextGen STM, presented by Ticketmaster. Official waitlist of your Cleveland Browns, being a NextGen STM, the best chance to become a season ticket member in future seasons. Visit clevelandbrowns.com/NextGenSTM to reserve your spot today. All right, this is from Jeff Kerr. This is the NFL, the biggest NFL draft bust for every team. Hello, Gibbe.
Yeah, we didn't print it on
purpose. I don't think your mic was on.
Because we wanted to have you guys guess a little bit.
All right.
Okay.
And, of course, it didn't come up on my phone, so now we're bringing it up on my laptop real quick.
That's fine.
Where have all my pens gone?
All right. I want to say that the big thing that there needs to be discrepancy on, I view bust at, I think the bust conversation, there's some nuance to it because there's injuries. Sometimes there's stuff. I guess to me, I feel like injuries are different than like issues with stuff off the field in terms of that, because that probably would have been in a background check in most instances.
Sure.
Whereas an injury, you can't help.
So Jeff Kerr says, the worst player drafted for each team who set their respective franchise back.
Well, that's
again, you could have any one of those situations.
Yeah.
Are you going to give us a team and then we're going to give
you
the
best?
Yeah,
I'm just going to pick a couple.
Go.
Because there are some obscure ones, but there were some here that we were like, whoa. Number 32 was the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Any idea who their biggest bust was? It's from 1986. I'll give you that clue.
So it's got to be a quarterback. It's got to be a quarterback in 86. Is it Vinny? Or no. Bo Jackson?
There it is.
So Bo Jackson, Hugh Culverhoes owned the Bucs, flew to Auburn to convince Bo. They drafted him number one. They flew to Auburn to get him to play. They said, we've checked with everybody. Your eligibility is going to be fine. They flew him to Tampa. He visited Tampa. When he got back to Auburn, he found out he was ineligible, and he said, go blank yourself. I'm going to play for the Royals.
Yep. Jackson was far from a bust as a player, but the Buccaneers wasted the pick.
No, it was – but they didn't know it at the time. He said – that's right. He said, don't pick me. I will not play for you, and then they picked him anyway.
Correct.
That's
they
right.
had to relinquish
because
their rights, and
trouble.
Then the Raiders selected him the following year in the seventh round.
Jeez. He's a hard one to explain to people,
yeah.
Like the phenomenon of him, like 2-3 years.
Let's see. Some of the other notables. The Cowboys, David LaFleur, tight end.
I have no point of reference on that.
Yep. There's a couple here that I'm like, I have no idea. The Texans – Care to guess? Biggest bust?
Biggest Texans
2002.
Bust.
Is it going to be Carr? That doesn't feel fair to him.
It would be David Carr.
That's not right.
That's not fair.
That's not fair.
Correct.
You could put Joe Montana.
Yep.
On an expansion franchise, he's going to get killed.
I don't know about that. Steve Young for sure.
Number 20.
Sometimes I just like him fat right down the middle, so yeah. You can really just drive into him, get the hips around.
Yeah.
Number 27 is the Chicago Bears. Biggest
oh, my God.
Bust.
Curtis Enos.
You could go David Terrell, Kevin White, Curtis Enos, Cade McNown.
And yet, you haven't even guessed it yet.
Give me the year.
2017.
Fields? No, Fields isn't 17. 17. Oh, Mitch.
There you go.
Yeah. That's outrageous.
I don't think I agree with it from the standpoint, and I understand that he's a serviceable guy, but in a draft.
He took him to the playoffs.
In a draft, but they had a very good defense. In a draft, hold on now. In a draft where you are, come on out. In a draft where you are drafting a quarterback and you're trading up for all of that that contains Mahomes and Watson, and you end up with that.
Neither, by the way, to be fair, neither of whom went in the top nine.
No, but. The Mahomes one, I'll give people a pass on because no one had really seen anybody like that. Watson, people passing on Watson was silly.
I'm just saying, when you draft a receiver in the top six overall, and he finishes his career with 400.
Yeah, with Kevin
White.
He's
a bigger bust than Mitch Trubisky was.
Yes, yes. And here's the other thing with where that's concerned. Mitch only played 1 year at North Carolina.
Yes.
So, like, the track record of guys who play 1 year – and I remember saying it at the time, like, geez, like, and he was a great player at Menor, awesome. And he was good the 1 year at Carolina, but he could not become the starter at Carolina until the previous, he couldn't beat him out.
Yep.
So he just played the 1 year. And it was a lot to be enamored with for somebody who didn't have a lot of tape. Meantime, Deshaun was a 3 year starter at Clemson, was the best player in the national championship two straight years.
Best in college football.
Yeah.
From a leadership,
you could make an argument he was the most important college football player from 2010 to 2020.
Because
he allowed for the Clemson dynasty, the national titles, all of it. It was on his back that happened. So, yeah, I don't.
Yep. All right.
That's the one I don't understand.
We fast forward up to number 23, the Kansas City Chiefs, 1983.
Blackledge.
You got it.
Todd Blackledge
out
of Penn State.
They took Blackledge over Jim Kelly and Dan Marino.
So Marino, the thing was that he, the Wunderlich got him, was that his testing was really poor on the Wunderlich. And I think the Jim Kelly thing was the threat of the USFL.
Yes.
And he ended up playing for the Houston Gamblers, I think, of the USFL. And so that was a real threat.
The USFL, yeah.
That was a real threat.
The Commies, Heath Shuler.
Had that one.
The Jags, 2011. Any guesses?
Jaguars, 2011. Boy, some of these years start to run.
Was a quarterback.
For me. Was it Bortles?
Blaine Gabbert.
Oh, Gabbert. Wow. So they went, and he's still playing, by the way.
He's still in the league.
So they went, they drafted Leftwich, Garrard, Gabbert, Bortles, Lawrence. They've had that many bites at the apple with the first-round quarterback.
Yeah.
If first you don't succeed, try again.
Yeah.
Number 18 of the Cleveland Browns.
It's Gilbert is the right answer.
Or Johnny.
Gilbert went eighth.
And yet Jeff Kerr does him dirty. Tim Couch.
That's not right.
That's not fair.
That ain't right, Kenny.
No, that's terrible, Kenny. It's Johnny. It's Johnny. He was a quarterback.
He's 22nd though, so that or whatever it was, like eight. They're both a mess.
Neither.
They're both a mess. But if Gilbert,
Johnny couldn't even play in the CFL.
Well, Gilbert didn't do much either. He's currently playing in Sioux City of a league I've never heard of.
Yeah, well, we're not sure about the veracity of that.
It's on Wikipedia.
Wikipedia entry, yeah.
He was on their website.
Cleveland's got to be
care to guess the 49ers' biggest bust of all time.
Druckenmiller.
Druckenmiller, got to be.
Replacing Druckenmiller on the list, Trey Lance.
Yeah. I don't think it's fair on that yet because you have an injury. They gave up a lot. The look of it's terrible. But at the same time, like, he's only 23. We haven't even seen him play.
It didn't set them back.
No.
They've been to two Super Bowls.
No. Uh-uh. I would argue, I mean, it's got to be Pickett for the Steelers.
I'm not there yet.
Yeah, it's got to be them.
The Vikings, wide receiver Troy Williamson in 2005. He was selected to replace Randy Moss.
Yeah. Okay.
Give me Seattle.
The Lions, Andre Ware.
What?
Ware, Klingler, Harrington, Charles Rogers.
Let's see.
Joey Harrington is way up there. Charlie Rogers would be way up there for the
Lions. L.A. Rams were Lawrence Phillips.
Yep. I think any time murder is how your prospect ends up. That's not great. Ends up a murderer. By the way, you're listening to 850 ESPN Cleveland, WKNR, a good karma brand station.
You would be.
Big move. Seahawks, number 7.
Dan McGuire.
Got to be.
Wrong.
No,
he's wrong.
Are they going to do Bosworth?
No.
Good.
Rick Meyer.
Rick Meyer. Yeah.
We went through it.
McGuire's bigger than Meyer, but here's the problem. They didn't take Meyer over Bledsoe.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Rick Meyer's a lot like Leaf.
Yes.
The Squealers.
Hold a second.
They took
Dan
a player.
McGuire was play mine. What did we say? Clint like.
Oh yeah,
Stouffer.
Kelly Stouffer or something.
No, it wasn't. It was something even worse.
Someone I've never heard of. Yeah.
The Steelers took a linebacker, Huey Richardson, in 91.
That's not worse than Pickett.
I would agree. Vernon Golston, number 5 to the Jets.
Yep. Three sacks on Long, and that was the reason
Seattle
that happened.
Seattle also
Long.
Could have been the linebacker they took in the top 5.
Out of Wake Forest.
Yes, who was really...
He was picked ahead of Laurinaitis, and he always had his name on the thing of like...
Really?
This dude was drafted ahead of me, and then anytime they played the Seahawks, he'd
People thought he was going to be...
He was one of those test guys. It was like a Mike Mamula thing. Like, he tested out of the gates. And
linebacker. The Bengals was Akili Smith at number 4.
Yeah, that's fair.
Number 2 was Jamarcus.
Yeah.
Number 1 was Leaf.
Jamarcus is way bigger than Leaf.
The number 3 one was the Saints. They took a punter, number 11 overall in 1979.
Aaron Curry was his
name.
Thank
you. Curry, yes. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. That's the
– By the way, this is a list done that I just pulled that out there because I said Seahawks' biggest draft busts. They've got Aaron Curry 3, Rick Meyer 2, Dan McGuire 1.
By the way, your vitriol for Dan McGuire to continue to put his name out in the public, who has been forgotten for 30 years.
I felt like he
years.
Was besmirching Mark McGuire.
And he's Mark's brother. Mark probably loves him. And here you are.
Oh, here we go. Listen to this.
Constantly dragging him in the mud.
This is the draft bust which casts a long shadow over the Seahawks even now. This was only a number 16 pick, but then Seahawks coach Chuck Knox, one of the best NFL coaches to never make the Super Bowl, knew football inside and out. He wanted another quarterback. And it wasn't Dan McGuire. Team owner Ken Behring, one of the worst owners in NFL history and a man who knew nothing about football, wanted McGuire. As it turns out, McGuire started only 5 NFL games and played only 13 before vanishing in a puff of smoke. The quarterback that Chuck Knox wanted to take at 16? That's right, Brett Favre.
Oh, baby. I wonder if he did.
Who knows, but that makes
it's
that
a hell of a
how's
story.
That not number one?
That seems like that's like
it adds
a,
more to the
that's
McGuire.
That's kind of like a Hugh Jackson story, right? Like, let's revisit the history because there's no way to prove I wasn't saying that.
So I want to do this before we go to break because I found this and then Brett Favre triggered it for me. But it involves Aaron Rodgers. This is from Ian O'Connor on Twitter.
All right.
Draft memory from my Aaron Rodgers book, the famous 2005 plunge, was put in motion by Tampa Bay after Bucs coach John Gruden told Rodgers they would take him at number 5. At midnight, the eve of the draft, Bucs GM Bruce Allen called Rodgers' agent Mike Sullivan to say, "We're not taking him." Sullivan's heart sank. He knew the client, once seen as the likely number one overall pick, was now going to fall down a staircase. On the morning of that draft, at the Javits Center in New York City, Sullivan told Rodgers, "This could be rough. I don't have a team saying they'll take you if you're there. I'm really sorry to tell you that. I don't know where you might go or how far you will fall. I apologize." Tampa took running back Cadillac Williams, who played 7 seasons. Aaron Rodgers, pick number 24, now preparing for his 20th season.
Cadillac Rodgers rushed for more yards than in his first 4 games, I think, than anybody in NFL history.
He was a hell of a start. He ran him crazy.
80 times a game for 200 yards a game.
Long-term, Ronnie Brown, who was in that backfield with him, and then so is Hillis, I believe, right? Or no, those guys were Auburn. Hillis was with Felix Jones and McFadden at Arkansas. But all of, Ronnie Brown may have had the better career. I wonder what made Gruden move off of him.
I don't know.
If they loved him.
Why not trade down?
A quarterback, draft a quarterback.
Nobody did that back then. Why not trade down
silly.
And get him?
Absolutely. All right, a little higher, lower coming up next. Just to Cleveland Browns Daily on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
Cleveland Browns Daily, brought to you by Ballybet, now live in Ohio on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
All right, welcome back in. Cleveland Browns Daily, 850 ESPN Cleveland, brought to you by Ballybet, sports betting partner of your Cleveland Browns. Time for a little higher or lower, presented by Keep It Fun Ohio from the Ohio Lottery, who reminds you to set time and spending limits when gambling. Hello, Gibby.
Gibby. Howdy. So we're putting together a mock.
Yep. In real time.
Yes. We're doing our own mock. Top 10 picks.
Yep.
We'll go with top 10. We'll see who gets the most right. Here.
Oh, each one of we're each doing it?
Or do you just want to do one? Let's just do one. Given the time constraints we have, let's just do one.
This is what we think is going to happen or what we would do?
We'll
talk about that on the air.
Oh, you did save it for the air. Good job. I'm open to anything at this point.
Let's see what we would do.
All right.
Okay. Or is it better to – I mean, we're just going to look at a mock draft and see what everybody else did, basically. We're going to project. Like, let's do what we would do. Okay. See if we can form a consensus.
Okay.
Number one, Chicago Bears.
Caleb Williams.
Caleb
right?
Williams.
Is it bad that I don't know if he's going to be the guy?
Why is it bad?
No, because nobody knows if anybody's going to be the guy.
I don't know if I like any of these quarterbacks.
Who's the guy
so
you
were
most sure of at quarterback
in my life?
Luck is probably
recently,
the one.
Luck, yeah.
Luck was the one where it's like, they can't miss.
And then Trevor.
Even
Lawrence.
And Lawrence. Yeah. Lawrence is probably in that. Yeah. But, I mean, it's short list.
Yeah.
You know?
I think I like Penix more than any of the other ones.
Retroactively, you look back on, like, Burrow, and you say, sure, but, like, he had so many weapons at LSU, and you just don't know.
Yeah.
You just don't know.
All right. So, Caleb Williams, number one.
Yep.
Number two, Washington Commies.
I think if I were them, I would go Jaden Daniels, too.
Same.
Sure.
I think new ownership. He's fun to watch. He's got wheels. Got to
get a quarterback. Got to get a face of your franchise.
They got some weapons. Drake May just feels pretty blah to me.
Is he Zach Wilson reincarnated?
I don't know. I mean, he replaced Sam Howell at North Carolina, and then he'd be replacing him in Washington. So.
Well, that takes us to number three, and the New England Patriots. This could go a number of different directions, I feel like.
Maybe
the Patriots make a trade. Maybe this is where the trade happens.
I think they're staying put, and I think they're taking J.J. McCarthy.
That would be something.
Bring in another Michigan man. I was reading about him. All he does is win. He won like three state championships in a row in high school, comes to Michigan.
Yeah.
All he does is win, wins the national championship. All he does is win. Feels like. They feel like maybe they get their next, you know, Brady. Elliott probably appreciates that cerebral assassin style. So I'm saying that's my vote. It feels like people are not that into Drake May.
Yeah, and I could see why people would fall in love with JJ. He's really impressive to talk to when you hear him. He just wasn't asked to do much. I mean, they beat Penn State. I think he threw it like eight times. They won in Happy Valley. He threw it like eight times.
Yeah.
Like, so he was... Now, he was good in the moments, but he didn't – that wasn't how they went about their business. So it's like a – that's the thing that's
maybe
a little tricky there.
Maybe
if I were them, I would trade out.
Harkens back to Tom Brady when he was
I think
young
you
man.
Need a lot of players.
If I
that's
them,
where I think –
You might be able to get him at 11. I would trade – I would see if Minnesota would give you 11, 23, and next year's one to move to three. Because our guy is – McGowan's on that staff. He coached Drake May in high school. I would see if I get Minnesota to come in at three. But I'm fine with JJ.
You're going to have a trade, I think, at 3, 4, or 5.
If I were New England, I would want it to be at me. I would want those assets more than I would want any of these quarterbacks because they have a lot of problems.
All right, Arizona. I'm not doing anything, and I'm taking Marvin
four.
Harrison.
Yeah, I would do that too. Yeah.
JJ McCarthy.
And then if
Marv 4 if I'm them.
And if I'm the Chargers, then I'm not doing anything, and I'm taking Neighbors.
Me too. There's all. Oh, we're going to take J.C. Latham. We need linemen. Get the weapons for the kid.
Yeah,
get him a help.
If they go draft an offensive lineman tonight at number 5.
There's a lot of talk that they'll move out of 5 and then get like Latham later. But I wouldn't. I'm with you.
But
I'd go Neighbors.
Like you said, who's Herbert throwing to?
No. I mean, they've lost. Give him a chance, man. No, I would go Neighbors there.
Yep. Giants 6. I'm going to take Roma Dunze. You need what? It's
no
a weapons
way.
League.
I think Drake May here. I think the Giants
somebody's
go quarterback.
Drake May, I guess.
Well, you'd probably get a trade up at that point if we hadn't had one. Like in our world, the Patriots
Denver?
Are picking JJ. So at that point, I think if you're the Giants, that's probably Minnesota. If somehow they get, I think Minnesota would get more antsy than that, and they would trade up either at 4 or 5. But yeah, I think somebody would come up to get him. So that would be Minnesota or Denver,
yeah,
or Oakland who would come up to get him.
All right, we're going to say Minnesota moves up.
Well, you can just say no trades and just say at this point he would still be on.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's fine.
7 is the Titans.
Seems like that's the alt guy that they like, right? The big
number one tackle.
Yeah.
For Callahan.
Yeah.
Although I would say I have Bill Callahan. I would rather get.
I'm with you on that thinking.
Somebody that is more dynamic.
Number 8, the Atlanta Falcons.
See, that feels to me like if you're the Titans and you're wanting to take alt, that's a spot where somebody, in my, if it went like this, if it went Williams, Daniels, McCarthy, Harrison, Neighbors, Adunze, I think 7, Tennessee drops back.
Yeah.
And then Minnesota or Denver, whoever comes up and gets Drake May.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Jets.
What about Atlanta? We haven't done Atlanta.
We haven't done Atlanta at number 8.
Oh, sorry. This is a
gutless Falcon
has a trade up.
This could be Bowers, the Georgia product, but they have a lot of weapons.
They have Pitts.
Play them both.
I think Bowers. I want Bowers to end up with like the Jets.
I don't want him in the division.
Daniel Jeremiah had Dallas Turner, the number one defensive player off the board.
They would love that in Atlanta.
Yeah.
Atlanta people would be excited about that.
Turner, and it's a defensive coach. All right, that's fine. The Bears.
Feels like they would go best. Would they go best defensive player?
People
keep going Latham.
I've seen a lot of Byron Murphy, the defensive tackle from Texas.
I think you would take best defensive player available.
Yeah.
If you're them, that way you get your franchise quarterback and you get a defensive guy.
Yeah. Try to do what Houston did.
Although, if like
one of the wideouts drops,
like if Adunze is there at 10, although in our mock he's off.
Gone.
Yeah.
May's going to go somewhere in here.
He will.
That we have somebody being picked. And then I'd have, if I was a Jets, I'd take Bowers.
Yeah, that'd be a sweet one for them. This first 10 is going to be fun.
Yeah.
The first 5 or 6 is going to be fun. Like, New England, our guy Elliott's in a spot there. He could net a lot. He could be in the situation that Arizona's in. He's going to have to, he'd have to roll the dice that ownership would let him kind of hang out at quarterback for
with
a
Jacoby.
Year. With Jacoby for a year, or
yep.
Roll the dice that someone would be there at 11. But if Minnesota was really motivated to come and it was 11-23-1, I would do that in a second. You're going to be bad anyway.
Yes.
Stockpile.
Now you got 11-23. You got their one, your one next year.
That's part of
Minnesota's going to be drafting a rookie quarterback. That's what got Carolina in trouble.
Yeah.
Did you see that haul, by the way?
If you could get, hey.
What
if,
the Bears what the
it.
Bears ended up, what the Carolina gave up.
Oh, yeah.
It's Caleb absurd. Williams. Starts there.
DJ so Moore.
Caleb Williams, DJ Moore. Like, obviously, they were allowed to get Keenan Allen because of it. All of these things.
Yeah.
And they ended up with Bryce Young.
Rough.
Tough spot.
Oh, my goodness. It's terrible.
Yeah, it can wreck you. We get your Griff fact of the day and one bold prediction from each of us coming up next. You listen to Cleveland Browns Daily on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles ready for next day installation and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
Cleveland Browns Daily, brought to you by Ballybet, now live in Ohio on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
And hey, Bo here for my team at Renew Home Exteriors. It is time to update the exterior of your home. You know it is. You're tired of looking at the same old vinyl siding. You can upgrade to the future with Renew Home Exteriors composite clad siding during their spring siding sale. It's on right now. Composite not only outshines vinyl, but it comes in 20 vibrant, maintenance-free colors to suit your style. Imagine a stunning exterior without the hassle. That's the deal here. Renew Home Exteriors and Renew Home Exteriors composite clad siding. Renew Home Exteriors, superior products and superior service. Visit them at renewestimate.com for more details. Time for the Griff Fact of the Day. Hello, Griff.
Fact of the day, fact of the day, fact of the day. It's the Griff Fact of the Day.
The very first NFL draft was held on February 8th, 1936. When representatives of the 9 NFL franchises assembled in Philadelphia, 81 players were picked in that draft over 9 rounds. And the first ever pick ever taken in an NFL draft, the Eagles selected Jay Berwanger from the University from the University of Chicago. He was the first ever player to win the Heisman Trophy. He also did not play a down of football because of salary disputes with the Eagles. He was traded to the Bears. He had salary disputes there and decided to become a salesman instead. So the first ever player drafted to the NFL never played a down in the NFL.
That's why when we talk about, like, the Bidwells got the Cardinals for $8.
Yeah.
Like, what were you buying? Basically a foam rubber outfit outbid the Bears and the Eagles.
Yeah.
He wanted $1,000 per game, and George Halas said no.
Well, that, I could, $1,000 in 19, what year is this?
36, yeah.
It's probably a lot of, that was probably a lot of cash.
What is $1,000?
My guess is
in 1936.
I'm going to say 50 to 100,000.
All right, here we go. Let's calculate it. $23,000 a game is what he wanted in today's money.
That's nothing.
Yeah.
That's it? It's only 20.
That's it. 22,460.
I don't know if that's right, because, Mike, you get your parents always telling you, oh, yeah, I went to the movie for a nickel or a dime, right?
I don't know. I'm on this inflation calculator, and that's what it says. It says $1,000 equals 22 grand, right. 23 grand now.
Picked in the fourth round of this draft, by the way, Bear Bryant was an interesting name I saw.
How about that?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, in those days, it was like, it was a barnstorming tour. Like, so if you had Red Grange or you had Berwanger, like, yeah, you were selling tickets. Come see Red Grange play. Come see Jay Berwanger play, and that's kind of the way that the league was run in those days. So that's why when you were doing the owner evaluations, I'm like, geez, some of these guys, I don't blame them. You know,
yeah.
Like, how the hell would you can't say that they're the geniuses for buying something for $8 you didn't know what it was. You know, they had no idea. They were trying to make it work. Oh, is this Reggie?
Okay, so Reggie's doing a. Why is he flanked by, like?
Why does he look like he's doing like a, I'm glad I'm in. It's like he's OJ.
I'm not in. Yes, that like, looks like, and he's got a team of lawyers behind
him. So weird. Why isn't he just like happy? And I wonder if he's going to try and sue for like damages or something.
He was very good.
Yes, he was. He was quite good. All right, you guys want one bold prediction for tonight? Go ahead. Yeah,
this is just spurring, and I think we talked about it a little bit, but would you think about Johnny Football, Tebow, if you think of the four, like, athletes who missed out on NIL, like the Mount Rushmore of that, are Reggie Bush and Leinart on that list?
They're the most on the list.
They'd be one
because
and two.
Here are the factors. They played their – Leinart played his senior season at USC coming off of a national championship.
Yep.
They were the second biggest thing behind Shaq and Kobe in Los Angeles, full stop. They dated Kardashian and Paris Hilton.
Yep.
Going into their last season at USC. They would have maxed out. They were the kings of Los Angeles.
Yep.
Those games, those USC games in 04, 05, every celebrity in the world, Snoop, Will Ferrell, they're all at the games watching SC play. That was like the U, except it was L.A.
Yeah.
Like, which, I love Miami, but it's not Los Angeles.
No.
From a star power standpoint. So, yeah, they are the top of the mountain.
So, do you think I have it right? Those two, Johnny and Tebow?
Those two, Johnny and Tebow. Bake would have done very well. Vince Young would have done very well at Texas.
Yeah.
I think of it from the perspective of not guys who would have ended up crushing it in the league anyway, but those who Hansborough's won. At North Carolina, who was a four-year guy who had a decent NBA career but was the face of Carolina basketball for 4 years. Those are the guys I think of. Rex, if you go way back.
Oh, man.
Screw that bum.
Tyler Hansborough? Yeah.
Rex.
Yeah, you can't do that. Yeah, I think those are the ones that jump out to me that where they would
have had it.
They would have had it. Braxton Miller at Ohio State.
Yeah.
He was a two-time Big Ten player of the year before he got hurt his senior year. He would have crushed it, absolutely crushed it. Maurice Clarett, had he played more than one season. A lot of Ohio State guys would have crushed it. I mean, God, they were paying C.J. Stroud nearly $3 million last year.
Yeah.
So, or 2 years
ago.
By
the way, Nana's done some research on the inflation. She thinks she's using the college that she went to as the benchmark.
Versus the inflation?
So she said, I went there and my tuition was $1,000 in 1968, and today it is $53,000.
I think the inflation calculators, I agree with her that the 22 seems low, but I don't know that we can use college as the best example.
Agreed.
So I'll do it again just to check. All right. So
maybe
I was on.
Find a different site.
I was on inflation calculator, money inflation calculator, calculate inflation. Oh, that's way too cumbersome. I just need to be able to plug something in here, guys. Come on. Yeah, 24,788. Oh, that's 1,800. 1,936. $1,000, $22,469.
Yeah.
That's what
it, there you go.
So I don't know what to tell you.
It feels like they really shouldn't have been.
I would say that probably Nana's evidence is probably a bigger example of the cost of college and how that is out of hand,
yes,
and has been for a very long time, juxtaposed to the value presented versus the dollar. That the college inflation has actually outpaced actual inflation.
I'm about to check my folks here. Cost of a movie ticket, $19.50. To go to a movie, you could purchase a ticket for 46 cents on average.
Yeah, and it's, what is it now? Like
10,
30, 10 bucks?
13, 13,
something like that?
13 bucks.
I have no idea.
So,
but I guess it depends on when you go and
sure
all that. The last time I went to
that's
the theater.
20-something times, though. So let's call it 13 bucks. That's
yeah,
26
so,
times.
Yeah, so that's about
yeah
where you were at.
Yeah,
with the $1,000 on that. One bold prediction for tonight. Do you have one?
I think I made it earlier.
J.J. McCarthy,
third quarterback taken.
I'm going to go bold prediction. Patriots trade at 3.
I like it.
They trade out of 3. That's what I'm going with.
I like it.
Give it. You got one? Uno, do you have one?
I'll say that a cornerback is the first defensive player drafted, not a defensive end.
Not a DN.
All right.
What about what's Griff have? What's his bold prediction?
That was what he gave me.
That's what he gave you? Is this where we reach the point where you are his talk? You are his mouthpiece? Because you do Griff fact of the day.
Well, he doesn't have a mic over there anymore.
Well, that's
that mic is pretty mobile though.
Yeah. All right. So that's his. Do you have one, Gibbe? There he is, Glenn Cook.
Harrison is not going to be the first wide receiver taken tonight.
I like it.
All right, there you go. We'll see how it goes. A guy who will have a great deal to say about our draft, which will begin in earnest tomorrow in the second and third rounds, is Glenn Cook. He will join us coming up next. You listen to Cleveland Browns Daily on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
Cleveland Browns Daily, brought to you by Ballybet, now live in Ohio on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
All right, welcome back into Cleveland Browns Daily, brought to you by Ballybet, sports betting partner here, Cleveland Browns, now live in Ohio, joined in studio by Assistant General Manager Glenn Cook, joining us in studio. So what is this like for you, not having one? You're used to it now, a couple years in a row, but how do you view tonight? How will you view tonight? What is your afternoon like?
I mean, there's still work to be done, but we're a little bit more spectators than fans, and so our group will come in a little bit later, and we'll kind of assess probably like two-thirds into the first round, kind of assess how it's going and get a sense of, you know, what our strategy may be going into the draft tomorrow. But it's, like you said, we're kind of used to it. You don't want to get used to not having a first-round pick, but I think we've been good about having a strategy that still allows us to get pretty good players for our team. So
yeah, you certainly have done that. Does it allow you to maybe disarm other people, right? Because, hey, what do you think of this? What do you think of that? You're not picking tonight. It's kind of like you are. You're just the friend who's like, yeah, I know a little bit about what we're talking about here, but I'm not getting involved. Don't worry about me over here. Are you able to maybe have conversations that had you had a first-round pick that you might not be able to have?
I think, yeah, a little bit, right? Like, I think if you look for me selfishly, you can get insight into how other people think through their decisions in the first round, and those are premium picks. So, you know, in the future, hopefully we have enough of them to be in the same situation. So it is good to kind of learn a few things here and there, but for the most part, we're spectators. Like, people still won't talk. They're still not going to tell you much.
Yeah.
When you know somebody like Kwesi, and a lot of people seem to think the draft is going to hinge maybe on what they do. Like, is that fun for you to maybe think about what he's thinking and then see whatever ultimately does happen?
It is. I shot him a text this morning, you know, just like shooting him one of the quotes him and I share together. And it'll be fun to watch. It'll be fun to watch. He did not share. I don't know what he's doing. Not sure what he's thinking. But yeah, in those moments, you can be supportive, but also kind of like I was talking earlier to someone about you calling him while he's on the clock and jabbing him a little bit about, hey, don't mess it up. You know, get it right. But no, excited to see what he does. Excited to see what happens at the top.
And plus, whatever happens, that's going in the NFC. That's always always better. Yeah.
There's a one thing that I think all of us do. Everybody loves the draft. Do you find yourself will you watch tonight right away? Will you watch it? Have you always been a fan of the draft? Did you grow up watching the draft?
I mean, since I was 9, 10 years old,
yeah.
You know, you kind of. Some people say they were building their draft boards. I didn't necessarily do that, but I always had a few players that for whatever reason I got attached to as a kid. And so it's the same.
You know, pet cats.
I'm almost a 40-year-old kid now, and I still will sit through every pick and kind of think through, I might have taken this guy, or I love that pick, or, you know, just working through the strategy of, like, well, who's going to go here? Why would this happen this way? Oh, it's a trade up, you know, trade down. So, yeah, I'm at heart. It's a strong, obviously, passion, and it's great to be a fan now in some sorts.
Yeah,
it's got to be different when we talked about not having a first round pick, and this is potentially the first year in the last three we might actually pick a player in the second round as well. So we've kind of gone without that. So when you talk about guys that you fall in love with, it's easy to fall in love with the guys who have it all, right? But the people that we would be drafting or that you need to fall in love with to draft, and you've done a great job finding guys like MJ Emerson and DeJuan Jones and Alex Wright and Cam Mitchell in later rounds. But when you know that you have to be looking at a piece of clay that has to be missing something, otherwise they wouldn't be available when you want to pick them. How does that kind of shape your evaluation process?
Well, so I think, one, sometimes it is, you know, potentially a missing piece, or maybe they just don't have this particular quality that makes them well-rounded. Sometimes it's just us as evaluators and decision makers who just don't see it, right? So I think that's what makes it fun, unique, and you can create a competitive advantage by just being a little bit more consistent at seeing those things that others don't see. So I don't always like to attribute it to, like, oh, well, these players that, you know, they just lack something. Sometimes we just miss, you know, like,
sure.
We just don't identify it soon enough. So that is, you know, hopefully where we will continue to push ourselves to be pretty good at, because you can get the, you know, MJs of the world who just really good football player. Maybe we just didn't identify, even us, you know, we took him at, you know, 68. Maybe we just didn't identify something that said he was much better than what we thought. But that's a part of the gig. And then, yeah, it's just, this thing is not a crapshoot per se all the time, but it's hard. It's really hard. It's really hard to figure out. So that's why we're always challenging ourselves, studying the game, seeing where we can get better, and trying to make as best decisions as we can.
How do you think about kind of along those lines? So let's say prospect A is a 10 at one thing and like sixes at some other things, or you get somebody who's like just eights across the board. When you're early, I'm sure you want somebody who's more well-rounded. You want those all be like nines, tens, whatever it is. But when you get into a draft, how much do you weigh? I want somebody who has one unreal trait versus somebody that is maybe a better overall football player but is not necessarily exceptional in anything.
It's the high ceiling, low floor one, right?
Or medium but floor, just kind of like, yeah, because I'm sure you have to do some tiebreakers of this guy's going to be a really good football player, but this guy has at least a chance to be more special. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just I think we do a really good job of just managing the risks that's surrounding all of it, right? So just depending on the position, depending on where you're picking in the draft, like those – those different profiles are either more interesting or less interesting, right? And so I think ultimately you just have to manage that risk. Like it's all a part of the equation of, hey, in this situation, given this player's profile, given the position that he plays, we're a little bit more comfortable with, hey, you know, he could end up being really, really good, or we may just, you know, strike out on this one, or, hey, we feel pretty certain that we're getting a pretty solid NFL player who maybe he's not all world, but he's going to play for a long time. So it's, you know, I can't give you an exact, like, this is what you do in every situation. But, yeah, I would say that's a little bit of how we would think about it.
Assistant General Manager Glenn Cook in studio with us. Just take the fans through the timeline of the last, you know, all right, this is the hay's in the barn at this point. Like, the work's been done. But what is kind of the time frame of gathering scouts, getting a consensus, here's a board, simulations, all of that? What is kind of the timeline on how that works, the way you guys do it leading into a draft?
I say it starts in a week, you know. Yeah. And kudos to our scouts. You know, we say it every year, we thank them, we try to express gratitude and appreciation, but I don't know that we can do it enough with as much time as they put into their jobs and really building the foundation for what we ultimately end up doing. And so that starts in May. They're already getting background on the next group of guys who are coming up. It could be potential NFL players. They're working through evaluations, you know, from January to August, just to kind of set the initial foundation of how we may want to canvas the landscape of the college football world the next season. And then throughout the fall, it's just kind of continued iteration. And we do it that way because, one, it's systematic, it's disciplined, and we felt like it's a good process, but also, too, it helps inform a few of the decisions we make sometimes during the season. So if you have a fair understanding of what the college market could look like come this time right now in, you know, November, when you're talking about trades or potentially talking about extensions, all those things are helpful. And then so now you fast forward, you get to the end of the season, it's over, you evaluated your team, you kind of have a sense of where you are, maybe where you need to make a few improvements. And it's just a weekly, you know, dump of additional information, right? So now you're getting to touch the players more intimately, sit down, have conversations, meet them at All-Star games, actually get to see them in person, sometimes for Andrew for the first time at the combine, right? If he hasn't been able to make a game. First time our coaches can get their hands on them and really take them through their learning process, you know, in February. And then really the last 2 months has been us as an organization from top to bottom, just working through strategically, all right, what is the best decision for us, right? So, you know, some of that is just working in a siloed fashion within the position group of just, okay, how do we just order the quality of players? Mm-hmm. And now we've kind of, you know, spanned it across all positions. Okay, what will be the best group combination, set of individuals, regardless of position, to bring into our team? And then how do we do that? You know, yeah. So I'd say the last 2 or 3 weeks has been probably the refining of the how. You know, how do we acquire players at 54, 85, and so forth and so on? Does that require a trade up, trade down, you know, staying put? And, you know, hopefully tomorrow, because not today, we get to execute on all that work. So that's it. Like I said, it's honestly oftentimes 12 to 13 months of a lot of work from a lot of people, college scouts, the coaches. You know, I think about, like, you know, Andy and
oh my gosh,
and Roy and all that. You know, they get onboarded, they get brought into, you know, the fold 2 months in, and it's like they hit the ground running. They've been really helpful, just giving us, I guess, input, you know, Ken, just the entire staff. So it's the coaches, and now it's, you know, looping in, you know, John Frayne, head of security, helping us, you know, just do additional diligence. I mean, it's a full hands, you know, all hands on deck, full process, 360 view of who we're trying to add to the team. Hopefully they help us win football games.
It's wild that it is so comprehensive. Oh, yes. And it is still so difficult because there are still so many factors that go into the ultimate success of these things down the road. With all of that work that goes into it, and then you get into meetings, and I heard this said once that, you know, the only person in the room that is going to pick every player, they're going to like every player that gets picked, is Andrew Berry, right? And he's the only one that is going to have somebody he doesn't like. They're not going to get picked. He doesn't have to worry about that, right? Which is a crazy thing.
I hope he does like them.
No, he likes everybody. I'm saying he's the only one, like, if you're going to pound the table for any, like, everybody that we draft, he likes, for sure,
And if he doesn't like him, they're probably not going to get him, right? Like, but other people in the room have put a lot of time in. And so you have to find that consensus ultimately. And then.
Yeah, I think he does a really good job of taking in all those inputs. And, you know, it's not always like, hey, he's in love with. He's the only one in love with every single player. You know,
that'd be a lot of people.
He's allowed us to push him and challenge him in some situations. And honestly, sometimes, you know, tweak or change his thoughts on a particular player because of how strong we came in terms of our counter arguments or our pushback. So
that part's gotta be
that's tough. The beauty of it, right? Yeah. Like, because, you know, it's not a dictatorship.
That's not what I was.
No. I know that's not what you're saying, but I think, you know, like
saying like for every scout who does all of this work, they all have the guys that are like, this is my pet cat. I love this guy, but that doesn't necessarily mean that guy is going to be a Cleveland Brown for a variety of reasons.
It's like 150 players.
Of course,
you love and you'll never, you know, whether it's like you won't be in striking distance to pick them, or it's just not, you know, like you can only have so many guys at one position. So
Andrew shared with me an interview we did for the Monday draft preview show. You guys went to the combine and really didn't think that the Jerry Jeudy thing was like in play anymore. And then all of a sudden you go to the combine, it is in play. And all of a sudden now Jerry Judy's a Brown and he signed an extension. How does, talk about the fun of how that all comes together. And then how does that impact, because you're probably going to the combine thinking one thing and now all of a sudden, well, we also have Jerry Jeudy on our football team. How does that change coming out of that going?
Yeah, I mean, that's why, you know, you make sure your process is tight, right? Because ultimately you never know what opportunities show up, what opportunities are available. And so regardless of the position, you know, there were receivers that we wanted to, you know, have touch points with, communicate with, you know, get to know a little bit more. And, you know, then the trade comes up, right? And that was a little bit of, I don't know how much you share, but it's an amalgamation of a lot of work.
It's been a few years.
You know, it's been some time. And so, again, that's our job, right? Like to always be in search of, you know, what opportunities, what players will help us win football games and fit best our culture and you know, the resources match, like the investment and whatnot. So, like I said, I'm playing out of my head because it was, you know, it spanned some time and that took some work to get it done. So it is fun to see it play out where you complete a transaction like that you didn't necessarily think you would.
It's interesting. We talked to you at the combine as well, but like, and I hope our audience, when you get a chance to talk to somebody like you and some of the smart people in our organization, we got a lot of them.
Yeah.
How comprehensive putting together a football team is.
The plan, the process.
All the P's. Yeah, I mean, you have to have all of those things. And because of all of the things you guys do, you have a team. When we had JW in here last week, where the draft is no longer the Super Bowl. The Super Bowl is the Super Bowl. And that's when it changes. Great to have you on, my friend.
Yes.
Always great to see you. Assistant General Manager Glenn Cook. Maybe binge some shows tonight. Sit back, relax. We'll see.
Maybe a few.
AB said he's doing Shogun, so that's the way it's going to go. And then we got a lot of work to do tomorrow. So
yes, sir.
It is great seeing you. Folks out there, enjoy your draft. We'll have coverage throughout the night on the Cleveland Browns Radio Network. The Next Level is coming up next. Thanks for listening, everybody. Cleveland Browns Daily, 850 ESPN Cleveland.
You've been listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, a production of the Cleveland Browns and 850 ESPN Cleveland.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles, ready for next day installation, and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.